This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora and welcome to episode 201 of the Half Measures podcast. I'm once again joined by my friend and co-host, Mr. Paul Kanawa. How are you tonight, pal?
Kia ora, Dan. I am really good. How are you going?
I'm not too bad. It felt weird saying 201, to be honest. Like, it kind of, I don't have the muscle memory of, you know, saying in the 200s.
So starting with a 2. It's all day. Is it like, I feel like there was such a build-up to the 200 and such expectation that now we've got there, it's kind of like, are we on like, we're sort of, we can coast for a few episodes. It's like, it's a new season. It's a new, you know, new year.
I often wonder about that. Should we have done seasons on the podcast? You know what I mean? Like, because every time I'm like, you know, when I upload the podcast, it's like, you know, you can put the episode number in the season. And I always think, should I make, you know, a season? But I feel like at 200 episodes in, I feel like that ship's kind of sailed. So we're just one continuous season.
It's a one season, unless you look on IMDb where they break it down by year. Mm. And so by, on their books, we're into season 5 because season 1, of course, was 2019.
That makes sense. That's kind of nice. But it's going to be too confusing and way too much admin. So it is what it is on the podcast side of things.
We're not about research. We're not about admin.
Mm, that's right. Well, Paul, shall we take it back to its roots? What have you been watching this week?
All right, then. So first up for me, Dan, it's a movie. I feel like I haven't brought a movie to the pod in some time, actually. And this is a 2023 movie, Fast Charlie. This is about a guy called Charlie Swift. He is a fixer. He's a hitman, but he likes to think of himself more as a fixer. But he's got a bit of a problem because the thug that he's whacked is missing his head, and he'll only be paid, told you he was a hitman, if the body can be identified. So he has to go to quite an extent to sort of prove that this body is who it is, and a whole series of events unfolds from there. This movie is stars Pierce Brosnan and Moreno Bacarin. This was better than I expected. I kind of saw it and I was like, oh yeah, give it a go. And sort of saw the ratings were middle of the road, but Pierce Brosnan, I'll give it a go. This is much better than I expected. I would say, because you and I have done a peak performance for Pierce Brosnan, but when I put aside, like, you know, Goldeneye, I would consider this movie as a really strong chance for being second runner-up, you know, like an honorable mention. Really, really good. His name and face on the poster was what drew me in. And then the other thing that got my attention was the director, Philip Noyce. Who's probably not a household name for many people, but I used to love a lot of his stuff back in the 90s. Pratchett Grimes, Bone Collector, The Saint with Val Kilmer, Clear and Present Danger, and then more recently was Salt with Angelina Jolie. Really good director, still is able to deliver a real good movie. Writing, Richard Wenk, who did he did the Jack Reacher movies and the Equalizer movies. So there's a lot of talent behind the scenes in terms of bringing a good action crime type movie to the screen, and it was really, really good, this one.
This is interesting. It's kind of popped up on my feed, Prime Video, is that right, for this one?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's popped up a few times, and I've kind of been intrigued, but I haven't quite got round to it. It kind of, as you say, it's got all the makings of a good movie, obviously. Pierce Brosnan, fantastic. Add a fixer hitman element, you can't go wrong with that. The whole missing head thing seems interesting. It's very much on my list. So it's good to hear that it's doing better than maybe the IMDb reviews are kind of pointing out. What's sitting at a 6.2 would almost kind of be enough to put me off. But if you're saying it's better than that, then
the Metascore is 70, which obviously is a bit better, and I'm more inclined to sort of go, you know, give it the three guns as would be my rating. Spoiler alert there. And, you know, the perfect runtime as well, Dan. 90 minutes, right on the money.
I love
for
that.
Me is just so good. I don't need more than that for this type of movie, and I like that they've just kept it to that. Pierce Brosnan has some great one-liners, and, you know, Pierce Brosnan can really deliver a one-liner as well, and it really had me laughing out loud. And if I'm 100% honest, right, the attraction for me, whenever if I see a poster or a trailer and it's got Pierce Brosnan running around looking serious, holding a gun, I'm not going to lie, a part of me is like, oh, maybe if I squint a bit, I can just pretend this is what happens to, you know, Brosnan's Bond when he gets old and retires. And there's a bit of fun in that because, you know, the chance to see him still serious face taking out bad guys is really satisfying. Morena Baccarin, who I know her best as Jim Gordon's wife in Five Seasons of Gotham. This was probably the first time I've seen her since that series, and she was good opposite Brosnan. That she had some really cutting remarks for his character as well. And, you know, I still can't believe he's in his 70s now. It just doesn't seem possible to me. To put that in context, to put it in Bond context, then, that would mean, so he's older than, he's older than Sean Connery was in The Rock, Entrapment, any of those sort of movies. And it's proof that eventually we all get old, but I actually think Brosnan looked great at this age. He's just superb.
It's kind of that classic older generation of actor, right, who never really retires. Like, it kind of, you know, we always talk about like the Clint Eastwood and the, you know, they've just always got like one more movie in the tank. Obviously, you know, what's 70, the new 50 these days? So maybe there's a few more classics to be rolled out.
Could well be. And, you know, I know I make jokes about the Liam Neeson movies and how they roll them out all the time, and I love to get involved because I can't resist. I admit those movies often aren't quite that great. This is a cut above. It genuinely is. And, oh, the other thing worth mentioning, James Caan, absolutely brilliant to see him. He will always be, you know, Sonny Corleone, you know, from those Godfather movies. Mm. So good to see him again. It was actually, this is his final movie before he passed just recently, but he has a sort of a pivotal role with Pierce Brosnan's character, and it was just really, really good to see him on screen one last time. The weak points for me, and it's probably no big surprise, I would say outside of Pierce and Morena and James Caan, to be fair, a lot of the support cast didn't overly convince me and they weren't particularly memorable. But, you know, they weren't bad, they just maybe didn't add anything. But that's really my only criticism, just trying to give it a bit of balance. But I wouldn't say I'd go and rewatch this, but I'm really, really glad that I watched it. So yeah, Brosnan's the draw card. I would put this up there with The Foreigner, which I had a look just before we recorded, Dan. We did a joint review of that Foreigner movie with Jackie Chan back in episode 22 of Half Measures.
Whoa.
Oh, so I'd say I'd put it up there with that one. It's better than, like we saw him recently in Black Adam. And I would say that this movie is possibly as good as, what's it called with Liam Neeson? What's the movie? Seraphim Falls, which is the Western movie, which for me is my second favorite Brosnan movie after GoldenEye. So yeah, if you're looking for a 90-minute action with an older James Bond behind the trigger, you can't go wrong with Fast Charlie.
Oh, it sounds good. You've definitely intrigued me. As I say, it's got all the makings. I think this is often, you know, something we're seeing more and more with kind of streaming movies, where obviously, like, you know, if they want to do a good movie, they need good production values and a good set. They need, obviously, like the main star. But obviously, even just scanning through this IMDb list, obviously, like the budget starts going down for who they can bring in as the supporting cast. So it kind of does rely heavily on a couple of main stars kind of holding it. But yeah, no, look, I'm interested.
That's Prime Video, as you said, it looks great on screen, this one. The other thing for me this week, and I will be brief as we've talked about this a lot, particularly recently, this is the third season of Succession. And, you know, firstly, I should say on air, an apology to you, Dan, for the number of Snapchats that I must send you throughout the week of crazy things happening in these episodes, because of course for me, I'm seeing it for the first time and I just can't believe what I'm seeing and some of the one-liners that come out of it. It is a series that just continues to impress, and the real, I guess, the strength of this show, and maybe this is true of anything, I don't know, but it just feels the deeper in you get, the more you know each of the family members' traits and triggers and strengths and weaknesses, and watching those things come together. And play out means so much more. Like, my appreciation for the hatred that they have for each other and the greed and the schemes they have against each other is so much more than when I saw them doing it in season one. And I would dare say that going back and doing the rewatch, as did you do the rewatch, or am I thinking of Ozark? No.
No, that was Ozark.
I would say, Dan, a rewatch of this from the point of view of particularly season one would be quite a rich experience, because at that point, when you first start, you don't know what Shiv's relationship with Connor and, you know, Roman and Kendall is. You don't understand it. And I think it would be really worth a rewatch, this one. And the finale of this season, I was just looking up the rating there. 9.7 out of 10 is the rating from over 16,000 votes. It's just absolutely amazing. If they were able to top an episode, you know, like the finale, All the Bells, I would be quite amazed.
I think this is the thing, right? Like, and I remember talking about this in the when I reviewed it sort of through the seasons. I think you're right. Like, the characters, you learn to love and hate them, and you just learn so much more about them, and you just know the trauma that they've been through. So even when they're being completely diabolical, like, you still kind of have a connection to them, and you're like, it's okay, Kendall, that you're being a complete, like, brat and self-indulgent about all of this because of all these other things. What I think has almost kind of surprised me the most is that I feel like you've managed to sort of come into this fairly unscarred by, like, spoilers and wider conversation around it, which is amazing considering you've hosted 200 episodes of a podcast and talk about TV with everyone. So
there are very few advantages to, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, but it's actually quite serious, there are very few advantages to having a bad memory, because I just forget. And I know I've seen trailers and reels, mm-hmm. and I've heard you talk about it, but things don't always stick in my brain, which, as I say, sometimes is a bit of a worry for me. But when it comes to TV, that is an advantage, because it means I don't have the spoilers. It's interesting hearing you say about, because I remember saying, oh, it's yet to affect me. This was after season two, that any of the characters I would like and then hate or whatever. And I said, I just hate them all the whole way through. But Kendall is now the exception. Seeing how the way he is not his fault, and how he was raised, and I mean the clues are right there in the opening credits. If you actually pay attention to those opening credits about how they're being treated,
he's the oldest boy. He deserves to be treated like the oldest boy.
That's Connor. Connor was just hilarious. Where was I going? Oh, Romulus, Roman. I still cannot stand him. He is the worst. I used to think Shiv was the worst, but honestly, Roman, everything he says, everything he does, his insincerity, there is never a moment where you see who the real Roman is. He's so many layers, and the performance, you know, to actually bring him to the screen in that way from Kieran Culkin is superb. He's created this despicable persona that is just so good to watch. But no, a great season. This third season, honestly, the hype is real. Kendall trying to find his base of operations. Tom and Greg preparing for life in jail. Matthew McFadden as Tom continues to be so, so good. The AGM where Logan goes crazy because he's got his meds going off and his UTI is playing up. Kendall's birthday party. And then of course the breakdown that Kendall has, and that's where you start to sympathize and they all come together to take on Dad. But as always, Brian Cox has got the upper hand, and that's where we leave it at the end of that season, and that's where season four will no doubt kick off.
I think one of the funniest Snapchats that you've sent me during the season three watch is the birthday card that Logan sends to Kendall. Is yes. One of the funniest moments, and like, you can just hear Logan's voice and the kind of the hatred and frustration. It's so well done. I think it's, I think too, like, the other thing, and I feel like we always talk about them, but like, just Tom and Greg are so special. And I think Tom in particular, because Tom is such a kind of a coward when he's kind of dealing with like Logan and some of the wider family. But as soon as he's on his own, like, he's in his element as a,
the big I am.
the big I am, yeah, like, and he's diabolical, and it's just, it's so great the way they just kind of like let you into their lives. And I, like, this is a show that I'm 100% going to do a rewatch on for years to come, because it's, I think you're right, like, it is something you'll go back and you'll kind of just, you'll get more and more out of it. And it's amazing that a show that's kind of, you know, each season's kind of relatively kind of about the same thing, often from different perspectives, is still so fascinating and still so interesting.
Yeah. So, so interesting. And probably someone just talking about Connor who doesn't get enough mention, Alan Ruck as Connor. He's the slightly loose cannon one of them all. And now he's gone and proposed to his girlfriend as well. I mean, whether that wedding happens, I don't know yet. But it is, it's just fascinating. So, yeah, I've switched back to, you know, Ozark season 4 now. And I've been itching to get back to that. But I tell you, I've got to go back to Ozark and review that and then come back here and watch Succession season 4, and I'll tell you honestly, I will love it if season 4 can beat season 3. Love it.
I cannot wait for our final big review of this and be able to, because again, it's so hard to talk about too. Like, I'm looking at the IMDb episodes now, kind of trying to get my placeholder of what's kind of happened or not happened. So I love that you've committed to this watch. Good stuff.
That is available to watch on Neon here in New Zealand. But yeah, those are the two things for me this week, Dan, other than our watch of the week. What about you?
All right. I've got a couple of movies for us today. So one dipping into the old lolly jar and one physical outing to the movies, which is always a fun time. So let me start with I kind of have had these movies on my backlist, back catalogue, whatever you want to call it, for a long time. This movie is 2001's Spirited Away, and this is a series of, you know, fantastic movies from Hayao Miyazaki, and he's got a new movie out now. I know these movies are great. I've just never got around to watching them, and they're all on Netflix. They're all absolutely incredible. And my inspiration for watching this one, not to be a complete kind of jerk dropping information, but I went to Taipei over the holiday period, and there's this stuff in Spirited Away which is meant to have some inspiration from some of the places we visited in Taipei. So I thought, you know what, this is a great time to check it out, and I can fully see that inspiration. So it's not the first movie in the collection. So as I say, this one came out in 2001. It's basically about a young girl who moves to the suburbs. And as her and her family are kind of arriving, they kind of end up kind of pulling over and checking out an old sort of shrine or temple. And they end up kind of walking through this tunnel that kind of leads them to another universe. And it's kind of just one of those really kind of beautiful but deep and meaningful movies where it's, I don't know, it's just, you can tell it's got a lot of heart, it's got a lot of meaning, there's a lot of kind of just, and it's really about, it's sort of telling, in my eyes, sort of telling the story of like what it means for this young girl to kind of transition from being kind of a kid to turning more into a teenager or an adult, and just kind of being more like accountable and dealing with sort of like life and decisions. But she gets, as the title says, spirited away to this magical world where there's all these kind of like great creatures and characters and stuff that she gets to interact with. And in the process, basically, her parents kind of, something happens to them, and she has to kind of like undo a curse that gets put on them. And it's kind of just the story of her adventure. As I say, completely like beautifully told, amazingly animated. It's definitely inspired me. Like, there's so many more movies that, you know, there's Princess Mononoke, there's Totoro, there's Ponyo, there's the new one is The Boy and the Heron. And often the English versions of these are voiced by some, you know, really big actors and actresses. So yeah, really looking forward to watching more of them. Had a great time with this one. Really easy watch, especially if you like your Japanese animation. This is And to be honest, I'm really late to the party. A lot of people love these movies. I've probably butchered the whole definition and storytelling of it already.
It looks very unique. And I was just checking out some of the beasts, you know, how the humans change into beasts in this world. And like some of these beasts are quite unique, very, very unlike anything I've ever seen in terms of very exaggerated features across the board. There's one, it just looks extraordinary. It's like a, do you remember, what was it, Terrorhawks? Do you remember Zelda? There's that yes. one where there's this old woman with like a big face and this massive nose coming out. It looks absolutely terrifying. Then there's one which is just like a big mouth with just teeth coming out. It looks fascinating from that perspective.
Yeah, it's funny because these movies have been on Netflix for quite a long time, and like they're all, like I always see them and I'm always like, oh, I should check those out, but for some reason I just never quite get around to it because I'm, you know, either feeling a bit lazy that I don't want to have subtitles, or I don't want to use the voice actors or whatever it is, and I'm like, oh, is it sort of going to be a kids movie? But they're honestly really beautiful tales. I imagine there's probably, I haven't done any sort of research into whether I should be watching them in any type of order or priority, but I'm definitely keen to check out a few more of them.
What I appreciate, Dan, is that you very often bring to the pod animated series, and the only time that I do really is if it's either Star Trek or Star Wars. And I feel like there's a lot of animation out there, and I perhaps need to, you know, dive into that a little bit more. Even the Harley Quinn series, you know, why am I not diving into that? And the ratings on this, just to give people listening an idea, so high, 8.6 out of 10 average, coming up close to 1 million votes on that. I mean, that many people can't be wrong. It's just incredible.
I think too, like, you know, this is a bit like, I've had a few people say to me, oh, I'm going to go check out the Blue Eye Samurai after, you know, yes. we reviewed it here on the pod. Like, it's just another, I think there's some really great animation and storytelling out there. And I think animation, I think it sometimes gets a bit of a bad name for being almost associated with arts. It's for a young audience I had a really fantastic time with this movie. I kind of, you know, there's lots of sort of deeper messages and meanings in there. It's so beautifully done. And for a movie that's, you know, over 20 years old now, it's, you know, I'd give it all the guns easily.
Amazing. Wow. And yeah, it is 2001. Goodness me. Where does time go?
Mm. Awesome. Indeed. So yeah, that's Spirited Away. You can watch that on Netflix, as with a bunch of the other movies in that same realm. But the next movie, Paul, I've got for you, this is keeping us really current. So I've been to the cinema, and I've been to see it's a 2023 movie, which has only just kind of landed on our shores, Poor Things. So this is the Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Mark Ruffalo movie. It has been up in the awards sort of contender categories with the Oppenheimers, with the Barbies, with the Killers of the Flower Moon type category. This movie's kind of been highly talked about, but to be honest with you, I didn't know much about it apart from the fact that there was a lot of people talking about this movie. And so it's a Saturday afternoon, Paul. We think, let's go to the movies. It was a little bit rainy. And let's go and see Poor Things. And let me tell you, we didn't check out a trailer. We basically had zero idea of the plot. And we walked into a pretty unique experience. So basically, I'm going to try and talk about it without sort of being too spoilery about it, because I think this is a movie to kind of like, if this... There's going to be people that are going to want to check the sort of like, you know, the sort of the ratings and the premise of this movie. But, you know, we started this movie and for the first half an hour, I was like, what the hell are we watching? And by the end of it,
this was a rom-com.
And by the end of it, it's probably one of the greatest movies that we've ever seen. It's like we both talked about how great it was. So let me give you the sort of the high-level plot. So Emma Stone is our core character. She plays a character called Bella Baxter. And it's basically about her story of she's a fully grown adult woman, but with the brain of a child, let's say, but that brain is developing at kind of a faster pace than usual. William Dafoe plays a character called Dr. Godwin Baxter, and he's often referred to as God. Think of this movie like it's almost like a Frankenstein kind of retelling. Like William Dafoe is the doctor or the scientist, and he's kind of, Emma, he treats Emma Stone as kind of like his child, and he's kind of helping her and supporting her. You've got Mark Ruffalo, who sort of plays the love interest of Emma Stone, particularly as she starts to sort of develop and improve, and you kind of understand more of the background and the context of the story. And what's kind of interesting about it is that starts off in black and white, and it's kind of a little bit of this whimsical world, and it really reminds me of almost like a Wes Anderson type film, where just the way some of the cuts are happening, the great kind of universe that they create, and it kind of like eventually kind of evolves into a full sort of full color story. And it's a story where, like, at times you're like, what is this all about? Like, but as Emma Stone's character kind of like ages and becomes more kind of mature, it's almost like she's giving you this really kind of beautiful view of the world as she sees it, because she's in this adult body, and as she's kind of getting older, she's kind of just asking all the right questions. This is 100% a peak performance for Emma Stone. Like nothing I've seen before. Same for Mark Ruffalo, William Dafoe, all three of them deserve awards for this. Be warned going into a movie like that. Like, there's quite a bit of nudity in this film, if that's something that you're uncomfortable with. But in the context of the story, it really does work, even though it was kind of like almost kind of shocking. And I actually think we had almost the best experience you could ask for. Like, we obviously like had heard about this movie in an awards context, but I think if we'd watched the trailer, or like, we might have been like, oh, is this for us? Or we, but kind of going into it and just having this completely kind of organic experience was amazing. Like, I'm still thinking about this movie, 5 days after going to see it. So had a really good time.
That's what it's all about at the end of the day, isn't it? When you think about it, where this podcast originated from is the things you want to talk about when you've watched them. You want to talk about it and have those conversations. And I imagine for you guys going in and also seeing this type of film on the big screen would have perhaps even more impact than sort of the sort of seclusion of home. Poster is fascinating, just sort of in terms of that body, then like the body over the top that's smaller. Like, it's that in itself is quite unorthodox. It's interesting you saying about peak performance as well for Emma Stone, and thinking, oh, we haven't done one for her. I was just looking at her stuff. She's done so much as well. William Dafoe is someone I always enjoy. The benchmark for him still remains The Lighthouse for me. He seems to do some extraordinary performances. I don't know the writers or the director, and I was just going through as you were talking some of their stuff, and I haven't seen anything they've done before. But this one has also been, in the conversations, it's been on my radar from the point of view that I've heard about it in an awards context, and I've heard about how it's getting a lot of attention. So I'd say this Yorgos Lanthimos, who may have just done a bunch of rather unknown films in the past, is very much now on the radar of Hollywood mainstream.
Yeah, it's funny because there's a movie that my previous boss used to always ask me about whenever we'd be at like a work dinner or something, and she'd always ask me about a movie called The Lobster, and that's a movie that he's also directed. So it's now kind of been like, oh, maybe I actually need to go check that out. So it's not available on any streaming platforms here, but it's just Colin Farrell. And I think you've got to give, like, William Dafoe in this is incredible. So as I say, he kind of plays almost like a Dr. Frankenstein type role, and his character is like kind of like all like scarred and like cut up, and there's all this kind of like almost kind of like weird trauma that comes with it, because his dad did experiments on him but he's kind of got this real kind of like positive outlook on life, regardless of all these things that have happened to him. And he has this genuinely like quite loving relationship with Emma Stone's character. And then, you know, like Mark Ruffalo, complete kind of, like, you know, like I mainly think about him from being in The Hulk, or being the Hulk, and or I think about that movie we watched about Teflon pans. I can't remember what that was called, but that was a, you know, great to see another side of him, and this is a whole other side of him again. So this is, as I say, this is an All the Guns movie. Highly recommend checking it out. If you haven't watched the trailer, and you trust the Half Measures recommendation, then I would almost recommend going in a bit blind to check it out, and I think you'll have a pretty good time. But yeah, there is the one warning would be it depends on your level of comfort with nudity and stuff like that.
Very good. Is it new to the cinema? Has it still got a couple of weeks' runtime, or is
it's pretty new. I think it came out in the States, I believe, in late 2023, and then it's only just started sort of coming around the rest of the world. Now, so it's only just appeared here in the last sort of week or so. So I'd imagine it's sort of got a good sort of another month or so sort of running in cinemas. So you should have time to go and see it.
Very good. Any more?
That is me, Paul, apart from our watch of the week. Shall we jump into that?
Yeah, let's go there. So every week we bring to the pod our watch of the week, either a TV series or movie. We announce what that will be in advance in our Discord community, where we have a bit of a running calendar where you can see what the next 3 or 4 weeks will be. You can join us there by clicking on the link in the show notes. This week, our watch of the week is the Marvel miniseries Echo.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one to have watch of the week. So obviously, Paul, we're kind of like dragging you back into the Marvel universe. I'm kind of like in and out of it, depending on where the interest lies. But so Echo is unique, I think, in the sense that, you know, only 5 episodes long. It is a miniseries. Stars our first, I guess, deaf superhero. She also has she's Native American. She also is an amputee. She's got all the things. And so basically the synopsis here is Maya Lopez must face her past, reconnect with her Native American roots, and embrace the meaning of family and community if she ever hopes to move forward. So a couple of things which I guess kind of really kind of sparked my interest on this. One, kind of like bringing back Kingpin, which I think is, you know, and especially, you know, the Kingpin that we've kind of know and love from the Daredevil series that was originally on Netflix. The fact that they brought Daredevil back in, and kind of like I'm kind of intrigued at it's sort of newer, more sort of like unknown characters, and to kind of see where they're taking the story. And also, you know, I guess worth noting that this is, I guess, here in New Zealand, an R-rated series. So, you know, a little bit more, almost kind of more in line with what those sort of original Daredevil, Punisher series were like. Paul, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, so this is interesting for me, Dan, because, of course, well documented on this podcast that I've sort of tuned out of the Marvel universe after Iron Man 3 and just sort of watched a few of the movies, like, you know, Guardians, Black Panther and Doctor Strange, and largely been unconnected. But of course I was always, and still am, very interested in those original TV shows that you referenced in the Daredevil, the what are they called when you bring them all together? Not the Avengers. What are the
Defenders.
Defenders. Thank you. And so that was my link in here. I really enjoyed this, and I was surprised by that, because I sort of came in thinking, oh, you know, I haven't done this. It's like this. It's like you go to you go to a concert of a band that you think you don't like, but actually you have a good time. And I really liked how non-superhero this was. In that respect, like, obviously, you know, Maya has this connection to the generations gone past, and I've you have to forgive me, I don't remember the names of those sort of, you know, going back, what those people, what their superhero powers are and all that. But I loved how it leaned completely the other way. And I really just enjoyed Maya as a character. And I think, is it Alacqua? Alacqua Cox, is that how you say it? Yeah.
I
just thought she was absolutely brilliant in the role. You know, you just really feel you're really in her, you know, in her corner, no matter which way she goes throughout the whole series, you go with her. Even when, you know, we had the flashbacks as a kid and we see her, you know, kicking that guy on the ground after he, you know, treated her badly. You know, I probably shouldn't be encouraging this, but, you know, we could go find a better way, but this is a TV show and I'm here for it, to see this young girl giving this guy a kick, and it's, you know, it's quite satisfying. She's really likable, and her whole, you know, that whole history and that culture and what her future might look like for her is really compelling. And this series has like a really slow build up, and it's interesting because it's slow and it's only 5 episodes. And for me, it could have almost no superhero or comic book element to it, and I'd still enjoy it. That's my longer than asked for summary. I really had a good time, as you would say, Dan.
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of the things that you're saying. Like, overall, I definitely found Maya an interesting character. I really enjoy her sort of like Native American kind of connection. Mm. There's another show I'm going to bring to the pod soon, which sort of has a lot of that too. But I think, you know, that first episode really kind of struck, particularly when they kind of bring in Daredevil, but it's kind of there's an amazing fight scene, but they don't ever let the Daredevil component kind of take over the show. They don't sort of treat it as, and I was kind of waiting for all 5 episodes for sort of Daredevil to maybe reappear again, particularly, you know, when we've got this isn't quite the right word, but like, you know, we've kind of got these, like, the superheroes who aren't doing the big stuff, you know, like they're not saving New York. They're kind of dealing with the street level crimes. And, you know, Maya very much kind of fits into that category of the defenders. And you could see her kind of like, you know, fitting into, you know, a wider group, like whether it maybe be like X-Men or Thunderbolts or, you know, whatever it may be, to kind of expand out those sort of that sort of street tier level. So yeah, I thought that first episode was great. I kind of loved the Kingpin elements. I did find, weirdly though, that like for 5 episodes, it kind of started strong and then it kind of died off a little bit. And I don't know if it really kind of like landed with like I don't necessarily feel like I know where this is going next. You know what I mean? Like for a mini series, it's kind of left open, and it's kind of just like, oh, I guess I'll, she's going to appear in another series, or, you know, so I'm not sure whether it was like, it was good, and it was probably good as an independent series that you don't need a lot of other Marvel sort of context. But at the same time, if we never saw this character again, unfortunately, like, I could see them easily just sort of, you know, maybe, I'm sure they're going to pick her up and, you know, kind of run with this character, which seems pretty special. But, and the way the series ended, you could easily see that they've got choices.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's kind of like you feel like you've almost read a couple of chapters of a book, and then suddenly someone takes the book off of you and you're like, well, hang on, we didn't get an ending properly. What's happening next? And I think you're right. It will get picked up, whether that's in the Daredevil Reborn or whether that's in a movie or what, I don't know. It's interesting you pick up on the, after seeing Daredevil in the first episode and sort of each episode thinking, oh, when's the next? And it's interesting because if I'm being honest, what I didn't like the most, and this shows how shallow I am, is how they gave us that tantalizing, you know, Daredevil piece in episode 1 and then nothing after that. And I just think that's possibly not the best way to go about it. Don't give us a bit of Daredevil, you know, after so long to throw him into episode 1 and almost like a tease there. I think you do that in the last episode and you tease, hey, this is the space Maya's playing in, and maybe, you know, a hint that we're, as you say, maybe we're going to see her wind up alongside Punisher and Luke Cage and Daredevil and whoever else in that next series. And it reminded me, sorry to bring everything back to Star Wars, but I have to, of an interview with Gareth Edwards, the director of Rogue One, and he said he deliberately left the Vader scene till the end. He said, because once you have Vader turn up on screen, you just want to see him all the time. And I'm not comparing Daredevil to Vader, but in terms of that effect of like, have it saved up at the end so that you can sort of see that this is where this person exists with this character. But to bring it in so early into a series, again, for me, because I haven't seen her and I know she's been in the movies and I know she's been in Hawkeye. And I have a question for you on that as well, Dan. But yeah, I would have done that differently because that episode one really got me excited for multiple reasons and almost took the shine away from Maya. But for me, she brought it back herself anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think it's interesting and a really good shout because I think it would have been good to have Daredevil episode one and then like even just 5 minutes of episode five turning out for sort of the final right. fight, kind of helping out, kind of being like, hey, there's another path that you can go down, and sort of like creating that segue. But, you know, it is what it is. But one thing about that fight, though, I thought Daredevil like went pretty hard on like Maya as a character. Like he really kind of like you know took the battle to her and almost in an unfair type way. I was like, well, just chill out, dude. Like you know it's you know you've given me your licks, but it was great. The other thing I think with a show like this is sometimes it feels like they're kind of like retconning some of like the Kingpin story and some of like how that all kind of plays out. And I say that with a grain of salt because it's been a while now since we've seen Daredevil and Punisher and that sort of whole series, but it's kind of like they're kind of making him a bit of a he's a villain, but he's kind of like a bit of an anti-hero at the same time. And like, you know, they're trying to sort of show some good and stuff in him. And obviously they showed the connection to Hawkeye in this as well. But I had a good time. It wasn't my favorite Marvel series that I've ever seen. I would be keen to see more of this character. I thought there was some real great additional kind of cast members. Like one of my favorite probably would be Cody Lightning, who played a character called Biscuits. And I just thought he had some hilarious one-liners of getting involved. And I also really loved the way that they brought sort of almost like a digital element to like American Sign Language. And, you know, I just sort of, like it's so educational and great that they just sort of show representation on so many different levels these days.
Yeah, no, I really liked him as Biscuits as well. I also, on that note, really like seeing Graham Greene as Scully. He shows up all over the place. He was good. Tantu Cardinal as the mum or as the grandmother was superb. We saw her just last week with Killers of the Flower Moon, and to see her again so soon was really, really good. But yeah, the Kingpin character, the William Fisk character, that he was a real highlight for me in the original series. And just to your point, you know, we haven't seen Daredevil for a long time. You know, that series finished in 2018. So it's been a while since we had that series. But the Kingpin, I just think I love the look, the voice, something about that voice that Vincent D'Onofrio brings to it, him in that big white suit. I mean, he is a real unit, this guy. And what I love about him is he's a bad guy, but he's about, not in a, you know, not in a mustache twirling way. He's almost reasonable and someone you could almost get on board with what he's selling. And I find that quite compelling. And yes, I know what you mean about the retconning and all the rest of it, but I really enjoyed that dynamic he had with Maya's character. Also, before I forget, a shout out down to Dave Porter, who does the theme music. I mean, I love his previous work, you know, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, but I feel like it's one of those themes. It really set the tone. We talk about it a lot, and alongside the visuals, I thought it really was in line with sort of like the Luke Cage, Daredevil, Jessica Jones. I just thought it really fit in amongst that universe, which I quite liked how that tied it together. You didn't want to click skip when the credits start up on each episode. My question for you, Dan, before I forget, was, and you touched on it before, was, you know, I had a look to see, oh, so where else is this character, you know, the movies, and I see she also shows up in the Hawkeye series. Should I be watching this, or will that not make sense, do you think, with me not having seen the Avenger movies and all the rest of it?
No, I think the Hawkeye series is quite a good watch. Obviously, you know that Hawkeye is a part of the Avengers, and this is kind of the a bit of a side tale, also introducing another new character, Kate Bishop. And so I think you'll be seeing more of Kate Bishop, who's kind of a, let's call her for the sake of it, a Hawkeye type apprentice. And mm-hmm. I think you'll be seeing Maya Lopez and sort of, you'll be seeing these characters kind of in future shows. So I think, yeah, I think that's another good one to check out. It's a relatively easy watch. I remember quite enjoying that one. She only has a very minor role in Hawkeye, but as often is the way with the Marvel / Disney universes, you kind of introduce these characters in a couple of scenes and then they get their own show. So yeah, no, worth a watch, yeah. I'd say.
I feel like this is almost like, it's like a gateway drug back, you know, to try and tempt me back in before I know I'm across the whole MCU, before I even know what's happened to me. And we'll see where it goes. I guess in conclusion for me, Dan, is that I, as I said at the start, I kind of came into it with low expectations. I'd heard, funnily enough, from more than one listener about this as well. And one of them in particular was like, oh, you know, this isn't the best. If you're going to jump into Marvel TV, maybe don't jump in here. But, you know, I enjoyed it. I liked how it's connected to those other TV series that I really enjoy with, you know, Daredevil, Punisher and Fisk and all that jazz. And so, yeah, for me, it was more of a hit than I expected. So I think if, you know, if you're a Marvel fan, you're probably already over it anyway. And if you're not a Marvel fan, like, you know, I'd say there's still something in it for you.
I think too, you know, like, yeah, sure, there's better Marvel series out there, but like to jump into like another one isn't connecting you to the new universe. Whereas like this is kind of, I think they've made these shows quite accessible so that you, you know, you can be someone like yourself who's kind of like, look, I've been off it for a while and I'm jumping back in and it'll kind of make sense and there's some familiar elements. So I think that they're doing a good job of kind of making it a bit more accessible. So it's still a good jumping off point. I think don't feel overwhelmed by the wider universe and what is this.
Mm. So yeah, that is Echo, available to watch on Disney Plus. Next week, Dan, our watch of the week will be the second season of the UK series Vigil. And that's available to watch here in New Zealand on TVNZ Plus. And as I said before, if you want to see a bit of a schedule ahead for our Watchers of the Week, just click on that link in your show notes. But for this week though, Dan, what's your pick of the week?
I think I'm going to have to go with Poor Things because of everything I just said in the review before. Completely hit me by surprise. Truly fantastic. Still thinking about the movie. There's a lot to discuss in there, a lot to unpack. So an easy pick of the week. How about yourself?
I'm going to actually go Fast Charlie. In spite of how amazing Succession was, I've talked about that a lot and then we'll see where I go with season four. But Fast Charlie really took me by surprise. Again, perhaps because I thought, oh, it might be average. It might be a middle of the road. But it was actually the perfect Friday night 90-minute popcorn flick. With the caveat that it perhaps is really for the Pierce Brosnan fanboys and fangirls. But yeah, just really glad I found it. So that would be me, would be Fast Charlie. So there we go. Right now, though, it is time to head to our news desk where Dan Moyning King has the latest headlines.
All right. So earlier, a couple of things on my news desk today. First of all, so Knives Out 3 will reportedly begin filming this year, which is very exciting. We've reviewed both of those movies here on the pod. So as soon as that one comes out, we'll also be checking out, which I guess is probably going to be meaning it's a 2025 release, but we'll be here for it. It looks like James Gunn's DCU has found its Supergirl. So those fans of House of the Dragon, Millie Alcock is confirmed as Supergirl, which is very exciting. I feel like Supergirl has, for me, has kind of been one of those characters that has been kind of relegated to the small screen, and it will be great to see what they do with her on the big screen. What else have I got here? So Vince McMahon, Mr. WWE himself, has resigned following, unfortunately, some sexual misconduct allegations. And unfortunately, not the first time that he's been accused of this, but Vince McMahon no longer at the head of WWE, which I just thought, you know, after all this sort of talk of Raw coming to Netflix next year, I thought we had to share this news. I feel like Vince McMahon has been the face of you know, wrestling for my entire life, and it's sort of interesting that obviously stood down through some pretty terrible allegations. Mm-hmm. So, which I imagine if are true, will not be good.
We won't have heard the last of that. If that's true, that we will not have heard the last of that for sure.
Indeed. And then the final bit of news that I've got for you is Severance fans can celebrate as production has begun on season 2 of Severance. So that was quite heavily impacted by the strikes. But don't worry, it's all back to work over there. Anything on your side, Paul?
Oh, amazing. That news about Severance. Really excited. One of those TV shows. I think the equivalent for me would be how you've talked about having to wait for House of the Dragon, or, you know, shows that are just like that 2-year cycle. It's been too long a wait, to the point where I feel like it needs a rewatch to really do it justice. So that is good news. And just on the Supergirl news you mentioned as well, I think you're right. It did sort of get relegated to the small screen. And I remember back, you know, maybe going back, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, we used to watch it on a Saturday afternoon with the kids, because it kind of had that feel. But I still remember the old Helen Slater movie from the 80s, and just sort of always wanting to see them come together with, you know, with the Superman, and bring those things together. And I've said a number of things about what I think about the decisions made with Henry Cavill and the Superman DC universe, but I hope, you know, given this opportunity, that they do take it and get it right. The only other thing I was going to mention, and this is just ridiculous, but it just really made me laugh, is that William Shatner, you know, now 91, he's joining the He-Man and the Master of the Universe, the next season animated show, because, you know, we had a great time with the first one. He's coming in as Keldor, sort of like the misunderstood uncle of Prince Adam. I'm excited about the idea just of having Mark Hamill and William Shatner in it somehow on the screen together. Is just very, very exciting for a geek like me, Dan.
Very fun. 91, another person just refusing to retire. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you ever sort of watch him follow him and watch what he's writing on X, he's constantly sort of retweeting fans who are saying, why are you still doing this? And he's like, he goes, if I stop, I feel like I'm going to die. I feel like if I stop, I'm giving up. Why do I want to stop? Why do I want to give up? And it's such a Shatner thing to say. And it's great, because he's still very, very funny with what he does. Mailbag. Dan, firstly, just an acknowledgement. We had a lot of a lot of likes, a lot of hearts and wishes from people for our 200th podcast episode. That was much appreciated to everyone who got in touch with us there. The official account on X for Lee Child, creator and author of all the Jack Reacher novels, and the producer of the Reacher TV series, retweeted our review of the second season of Reacher, which was awesome. I'm almost at the verge of saying friend of the pod now, because this is the third time in the last 3 months that Robert Patrick has got involved. He shared our Reacher season 2 review as well, which was awesome. We had the director of Wellmania, also from last week's pod, shared our review of that as well, which was awesome. Switching gears somewhat, in last week's pod, we talked a bit about the upcoming Avatar Last Airbender series, and Jacinta from Lower Hutt. Dan, you will recall we've heard from her in the mailbag quite a few times. Well, Dan, Jacinta is quite the fan of Avatar, and she notes that your reference to the flying cow in The Last Airbender was quite incorrect. Fact check, Appa is a flying bison. And I quote, Dan 100% needs to watch the animated series. So I think hidden within that message is a recommendation that maybe we give the animated show a watch. And I've heard that from a number of people, actually.
My apologies to all bison and cows alike. I'll try not to confuse my sky bison with land cows again. But no, this is a good shout. It's been another show that's like so long on my list. I mean, again, but it's kind of like animated. So there's kind of like, I don't know, you get kind of like, there's a block, but I know that as soon as I start it, I'm probably going to fall in love with it. And I've heard people say Avatar is up there with like Game of Thrones quality. So, and I think it would probably kind of help, I would imagine, coming into the live action to be able to make some of those comparisons. So who knows? Maybe we can squeeze it in.
My brother-in-law is a huge, huge fan of the animated series. I would say he probably has it in his like his top three or four shows. So there's a lot of, and fans are like, fans who are into it, there is like a, this cult following, like a real sort of strong following. So I'll be honest with you, I'm going to watch the live action show, which I think, you know, both of us will as part of a watch of the week and go from there. But I'm starting to feel like I'm missing out on something, and tempting.
It's funny because I kind of feel the same way about One Piece. Do you know much about this, Paul? The One Piece anime. So last year, Netflix created a live action One Piece TV show. But the thing with One Piece is I think there's like 600 episodes or something crazy like that. But people that like One Piece are like they love One Piece, and they talk about it as the greatest series. So I think we are kind of missing out. It's sometimes knowing where to jump in with some of these things.
That is an extraordinary, I mean, that's like a soap opera number of episodes. So, wow. Okay. Where was I? Oh, so yeah, so those are the main things in the mailbag. And also, of course, our peak performance. Last week we had Jim Carrey, and we had a few suggestions come through. Owen went with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I remember, Dan, falling asleep watching this movie, and I felt like this movie went on for 3 hours. And so I looked it up again because I thought, what's going on here? And it turns out it was just an hour and 48, so I don't know what was going on. I think I was maybe jet-lagged. That's my excuse. I feel like maybe I need to revisit this, as looking at all of Jim Carrey's movies, it's actually his top-rated movie, so maybe I've missed a trick there. Ryan went with Man on the Moon, the Andy Kaufman movie. Diana said so many to choose from and gave a 3-2-1. Ace Ventura, Dumb and Dumber, and peak performance is 1990s TV show In Living Colour, in which Jim Carrey starred in 124 episodes. And this is where she first saw him and knew straight away that he was just awesome. So In Living Colour is the peak performance there. And finally, Paddy, 3-2-1, Liar Liar, Lemony Snickets, a series of unfortunate events. And peak performance was Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. I feel like the Ace Ventura movie is one I could easily go back and watch. I haven't watched that for many years. That's our mailbag, Dan.
Some great shouts. I love some Ace Ventura. I love Lemony Snickets. I also love The Grinch. There's so many great Jim Carrey movies that could easily be rewatched at any given time. Paul, is it time for our peak performance?
It is indeed. And every week, Dan and I take it in turns, choose someone from Hollywood, pick out what we think is their best performance. This week, Dan, we are looking at Viola Davis.
We are indeed. So when you first said to me Viola Davis, I think I know what my choices are. And as soon as I brought up my IMDb page, there were so many options. And I was just like, oh my God, she's got so many great movies. So honourable mention, I'm going to go with a recent watch of The Woman King. This was the 2022 movie. Really enjoyed it. Really kind of like just showing her range as an African warrior. I thought she was fantastic at this, both in leading the warriors, the plot, the story. It was all incredible. But for my peak performance, I'm actually going to go with a movie that I slated very heavily last year, which was The Hunger Games, the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Like, I did not enjoy this movie at all, but I did enjoy her character, and I thought she did an incredible job as Dr. Volminia Ghoul, and I, like, both creepy and a key driver of sort of the wider kind of Hunger Games story, the fashion, the style. That it was just fantastic. And I think despite not overly enjoying that movie, I can't help but think about her character as actually being a real key stand-up.
So funny, Dan, because my peak performances are both different, but has a very similar flavor. And it's interesting because when you started talking about your peak performance, I thought, oh my goodness, are we going to be randomly in sync here? But we're not. So for me, the honorable mention for me is in a movie that I also slated, and that's 2013's Ender's Game, where she plays the part of Gwen Anderson. And, you know, as I say, this is not a film I particularly rate at all, and I went into it with really high expectations, but I did think she was absolutely superb in this. And, you know, Anderson's in, you know, she's the officer in charge of the game, and, you know, she watches all the battles and sort of presides over the, you know, the victory and the ceremony and all that. And she really sells that. And it's her performance that's memorable, because when I think back to this movie, you know, going back over 10 years now, this is a movie with Harrison Ford, Ben Kingsley, you know, a big cast. And yet Viola is the one with the more memorable performance for me. And, you know, I think probably alongside Hayley Steinfeld, to be fair. And I think it was the first time, or at least the first time I can remember seeing her too. And so that sort of gets my honorable mention. It was also just came out just before my peak performance kicked off. And that is in 2018's How to Get Away with Murder. And honestly, as you would say, Dan, I cannot go past her role as Annalise Keating in this. I feel like it's much understated or underrated, whatever's the appropriate one. There's the role she plays in this series, there's so much emotion, there's so much confrontation, and, you know, all of these multiple different relationships that she has, you know, from family to students, with her partner, with her fiery relationship with her mother. She's battling, you know, alcohol addiction, depression, betrayal, and as the title suggests, you know, murder. There's so much going on that you get a really rich performances. And I was just looking, there's, you know, you get 90 episodes, so you get a real depth there. And I think I remember writing this show off when I first started it, thinking, oh, this is going to be a bit teeny bopper or whatever, but I ended up watching the whole thing, and it's actually great television. And without any doubt, it's Viola's performance that is what makes the, you know, she's front and center, she what makes the whole show work. So yeah, Ender's Game and How to Get Away with Murder.
Very good shouts, as per usual. Well, Paul, I guess that brings us to the end of another episode of the Half Measures podcast.
It does indeed. Thank you for listening in this week. If you're new, or if you're looking for a specific TV show, don't forget halfmeasurespodcast.com, and you can search our database of over 900 reviews of quality, in-depth analysis.
Sometimes quality. Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Whiting-King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a Patreon producer of the show, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone, adios.